Hey everybody, you're listening to the Creative Journey Podcast. We help boost you up and inspire you to soar as you walk along your creative path. I'm your host, Arlie. You can stay up to date with everything Creative Journey Podcast by following me on my Facebook or Instagram accounts at Arlie Cox. Let's get going. Hey everybody, I hope you're having an okay week. Today is an okay week for me because, oh my God, we made it to episode 30. My math was off last podcast as I said I only have 60 to go, and that was wrong. I did not crunch my numbers properly. I actually have 70. I missed the 10 on the end, but I'm taking 30 as my first milestone, and I couldn't be happier that I made it even this far. And that is all with help from you and anybody who gives this a quick little listen. So I'm recommitting myself to the next 70, and as I recommit, I also am going to promise this podcast and my art in all its forms that I'm going to start to court it like it's my newest, most exciting, true love. So I have a little disclaimer at the beginning of this podcast. If there are little ears listening to this one, you might just want to save this one for yourself later on. I might cover some topics that just might not feel so great for little ears. And so I'm giving you the option to opt out right now, and you can listen to this in your own time later on. I just want to say that before I get a call. That it was not appropriate for little ears. Okay, moving on. So today I want to open the conversation on courting your art. To bring new inviting energy to it. Elizabeth Gilbert talks about this in her book called Big Magic. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Big Magic. It's a book that changed my perspective on art, and it kind of changed my life. And I listen to it on audiobooks or Audible regularly. And I also have the hard copy. It's one of those things that every once in a while when I'm feeling uninspired, I go back to. There are two chapters specifically that I'm talking about today. One is called Have an Affair, and the other is called Tristram Shandy Chimes In. In Have an Affair, she likens to making and being with your art and creativity like you are having a steamy love affair with it. Why do we persist with creativity in the first place when it's hard and difficult and ultimately functionally unrewarding at times? We persist because we're actually in love with it. And if you really think about your art or the things that you like to do or the creativity that comes in, there's this underlying feeling of human love. Our capacity to love it outweighs the fact that we may not make it our profession or we may not make money off of it. We persist because we are hot for it. She explains So she explains this. You know how people who are having extramarital affairs, they find any reason to run away with that person to a secret location to have hot, transgressive sex with their lover. They always manage to find time, even if they have full-time jobs and families to support. They always manage to find the time to sneak off and see their lover, no matter what the difficulty, the risk, or the cost. Even if they only get 15 minutes together in a stairwell, they will take that time and make the most of it. And if anything, the fact that they only have 15 minutes together makes it even hotter. When people are having an affair, they don't mind losing sleep or not eating. They will make and take whatever sacrifices they need to in order to blast through any obstacles, to make it happen, in order to be alone with the object of their devotion and obsession, because it matters to them. Let yourself fall in love with your creativity like that and see what happens. Stop treating your creativity like it's a tired, old, unhappy marriage, a grind and a drag, and start regarding it with the fresh eyes of a passionate lover, even if you only have 15 minutes a day in a stairwell alone with your creativity. Take it. Go hide in that stairwell and make out with your art. You can get a lot of making out done in 15 minutes. Sneak off and have an affair with your most creative self. Tell people you are going out of town, but retreat to your own house. Create a sacred space and a sacred corner with your creativity to paint or write poetry or to draw up plans for that garden. Conceal it from your family and friends. Slip away from everyone else at the party and go off to dance alone with your ideas in the dark. Wake yourself up in the middle of the night. Meander off to a room alone for your inspiration, and your inspiration only, while nobody is watching. You don't need that sleep right now. You don't need that sleep right now. You can give it up. Don't think of it all as burdensome. Think of it like it's the sexiest thing in the world. In the words of Liz Gilbert. Juicy, juicy, juicy. That was juicy. She has a way of reminding people that we can treat our creativity like a relationship. Because it is. It's like a marriage. It's like something that lives with us forever. It brings up feelings for me because as I read that small chapter, it brings me back to a time in my life when I was quite young and seriously and ferociously dating my creativity. And I did it just on my own. I didn't get prompted to do this. I just felt like it was something that I got guided to on my own. It was some of the most entwined, juicy times I've ever spent with myself because I was young. I was so new to writing and music. I was fresh. I was 17 with a driver's license. Now, everybody knows that when you get your driver's license, it's like a whole new sense of freedom. So I had my driver's license, a notebook, and a pen. And in between jobs, I would take myself on dates. Just me and my inspiration. I'd sit in a coffee shop or a bar and simply observe the room. I'd observe and write and observe and write. And there was always something so fascinating and freeing about doing that and not letting anybody know. And there was like a mysterious quality to it. My young mind experienced it as freeing and daringly secretive. Nobody knew what I was writing, which was another deep part of the sexiness of it. It was like, who's that girl sitting over there with a notebook? What's she writing? And what is she observing? It was all for me, which was beautiful, and no one else. Absolutely no one else. It was all for me. And I have notebooks and notebooks and notebooks of my writings from this time. And sometimes I'll flip through them. And it's fascinating to see what my young mind was taking out of what I was observing in the world. I wrote like this when I traveled and while I was working and going to school. Within and with and between boyfriends and men, they were like such an incredible source of material. The boyfriends were, yeah, that's true. And on it went until eventually life really started to happen. And I stopped dating my gorgeous creativity. I stopped dating it probably in my university days when it just didn't seem like there was a lot of time. I was singing classical music. I was taking extra courses to get a minor in history. It just kind of went out the window. I was singing with bands at the time, but that was like, that took up a lot of that extra time. So in my late 20s, so I went back to school really, really late. I lost my sort of drive for dating my own creativity. And I happened upon this book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And it was a spiritual path to higher creativity. Julia Cameron wrote this book. It's a book that changed the landscape of my creativity and brought back all the yearning and hot sexiness that I had lost. I committed myself to jump in and follow the chapters in this book diligently. And I'm not going to lie, if you've ever done this or if you've ever heard of this book, it's really hard to do. And I'll tell you the honest truth. By the time I reached chapter 11, I like had to bail. Like it was so difficult to stick with it. But I guarantee you, even if you get to chapter 11, it's going to jumpstart something in you. It jumpstarted me back into my affair with creativity. And my first album started to emerge from those writings that I did. Another chapter in Elizabeth's book, Big Magic, is a chapter all about Tristram Shandy. It's all about presenting yourself to your art as if you're the sexiest thing on the universe, as if you're somebody you are worth spending time with. So Tristram Shandy was a novel written by Lawrence Stern, an 18th century novelist and essayist. And in the novel, his character, Tristram, presents a marvelous cure for writer's block. He says to dress up in his finest regalia and to act princely, thus attracting inspiration and ideas to his side. Because of his incredible ensemble and the jewels on his fingers, if he ever felt like the words weren't flowing from his pen, he would jump off his chair, give himself a shave, change his shirt, put on a better coat, and order his best wig to be powdered. He'd dress himself from one end to the other. Then, decked out in his finest jewelry and clothes, he would strut around the room, presenting himself to the universe of creativity as appealing as possible, looking every inch like a dashing suitor. A charming, charming man. But best of all, here's the deal. Best of all, this little getting dressed up for your creativity actually works. I've been toying with this lately myself, and it has been working miraculously. It's been working miraculously because I'm often found in my two-day-old PJ pants and my hair tied up in a top knot, my teeth unbrushed, and a cold cup of coffee beside me. So I've started to shower. Not that I don't shower, you guys. Like, I shower. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes when I'm in the mode of creativity, I'm like not dressing up at all for anything. Like, I'm pretty on a path. I'm on a path, and you know, not even a shower can stop me from the path, but it doesn't always come with the best of energy. So I've started to put on my like fanciest blacks. I call them my fanciest blacks because it's really actually like my better black shirt with the holes in the armpits, not so faded out. I don't really buy myself clothes. I'm going to have to do that soon because things are starting to rip. Okay, so I put on my fanciest blacks, quote unquote, my jewels, and which would be a big chunky necklace and maybe like a little silver bracelet or something. I do my makeup, I do my hair, and creatively after that, I honor myself because I'm loving up all my outer bits and I feel so much better. I feel good inside and out, and it's like the top of my head opens up and inspiration is allowed to fall in a different way. It has a bigger space to fall in. I feel good about myself. I'm feeling like a little bit more in my body. I'm feeling a little sexier. I become the courtesan to my work. The courtesan is an important part of any creative endeavor or muse. So I've been doing some research. I have been listening to this book. Oh God. Okay. So I've been listening to this book called Pussy, A Reclamation. And it's by this woman. I can't remember her name at the moment. I don't know why. It was just on the tip of my tongue. It's a great book. It's an amazing book. And it's all about reclaiming our power as women. And if you're a gent here, sorry, I apologize, but I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. And she has several chapters about the courtesan. And courtesans were essentially high-class prostitutes. But not only were they gifted in the art of sex and sexual pleasure, they were way more than that. They were actually so, so, so incredibly powerful. And some of the most highly educated women of their time. Okay, so there is a reason here, and they weren't just about sex and pleasure. It was like a whole different ball game with them. They were muses. They were used for inspiration, and they actually guided policy and politics of the men that they were serving. I know that sounds horrible, but I have to say, like, if we know history, history wouldn't be the same unless the women in the West, in the old Western towns, brought in prostitution to supply the schools and the men with nursing and medication. Okay, so pretty much the West was built on prostitution. And fabulous, because it held up so much structure. Okay, so back on point. I'm getting all flustered here. Okay, so they were stewards of language, of painting. The courtesans were stewards of language, painting, art, music. They dressed in the finest clothes and had outrageous power for their time. So when I dress up for my creativity, I feel like I'm in the sisterhood of the courtesan. I flirt with my art and I allow it to be fun and fanciful and full of mystery and intrigue. And just recently, I've really been digging into those feelings and it's putting on a whole different energy for me. So instead of feeling like, oh my God, I have to create and I have to produce and I have to put this stuff out, it's just like, it's doing this juicy thing on the other end. And actually what I'm going to be doing with this, because my album is coming out soon, I keep talking about it, but I'm like freaking terrified about this album, you guys, because it's like the live album and it's taken a little bit of extra energy for me to be like, okay, I'm going to put this out and it's going to be really good. But it like, it's scary. I'm like terrified. So what I'm going to start doing with this is like switching the energy on this, putting in the like sisterhood of the courtesan, like flirting with the idea of being different and allowing it to move and come out as it wants to, and just being solid in my foundation of like the sexiness of putting out a live album, like the juiciness of doing something different and the juiciness of also showing up in this like super raw way, if that makes sense. So I'm going to flirt with this. I'm going to try and make it a little bit more fun and fanciful, and I'm going to allow it to teach me where it wants to go and how it wants to grow. Ultimately, it fills my heart up with bright light. So this feeling of flirting with it versus, oh my God, I gotta get it out and I gotta do this and I gotta do that and da 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 da. If I can just like switch my thinking on it and fill it with bright light and juicy sexiness, I think it's gonna have like a totally different energy when it comes out. Now, disclaimer, of course there are days when it's old pajamas and cold coffee, but the days where I dress up and put some gloss on my lips, those days seem to be the juiciest to create my art. I am in love and I don't care who knows it kind of days. So if you're ever stuck, dress yourself up and take yourself on a hot date with your art. It will love you forever. It will love you forever and ever. So what does that look like? It looks like you get home from work, or you book a day. You book a day on a weekend and you keep that day just for yourself, where A, you dress up and you hide away in your house and you create your art and you gather all these beautiful little sweet goodies around you, like make yourself some delicious food and eat chocolate and buy yourself a little bottle of champagne or a delicious wine, and you just savor everything and you just taste everything like you've never tasted it before. Or you can take yourself out on a date, so you can go and like buy yourself a really beautiful little dinner. Or you don't even have to spend money to do this. You can go sit in a park, or you can go grab a little cup of coffee or bring a cup of coffee and sit somewhere in the public where you can observe people. Like, just dress yourself up and make yourself feel fabulous, because like, you deserve it. And we can do this, and we can also toy with the energy around this. So toy with it, have fun with it, flirt with it, but give yourself a little window of time where you can play around with it for yourself, because you deserve it and because you're worth it. Let's get a little flirty with our art. Side note. So it's been a sad couple of days for the sweet community of Thunder Bay. We have lost a musical legend, so I wanted to dedicate this flirty, sweet podcast to Camden Blues, because he lived generously. He always dressed up for his art. His creativity poured out of his soul, and because he was running on borrowed time, he never let anybody or anything come between him and his art. He invited me up on stage generously. This was like years ago, back, way back in the day. And that's just when I first met him. And he always invited me on stage with him, and I'd sing a little song or something. We'd just put something together. And it was always really random, but he never had any doubt in his mind that I would be on stage with him. And he was always so welcoming to me. And then we would always touch in with each other here and there through the musical community. He went to Memphis, and there was like lots of beautiful community support behind him there. And then when I went through my divorce, he reached out to me as a friend, and we connected through similar situations. But he reached out to me, and we talked music, and we talked creativity, and he just made me feel like a regular human being again. And this was even despite his own struggles with cancer. And I'll never forget that. He was a beautiful soul. Camden, you are so loved. And I know you're out there. I know you're out there watching everybody and listening to music and playing music and being a gorgeous steward for others who are walking the path. So, if you are out there, and I'm talking to you right now, those of you who are listening, if you are out there and you're not running on borrowed time, what the fuck are you doing not following your dreams or courting your creativity? What are you doing? We are all on borrowed time. But if you are not running on borrowed time like Camden was, what are you doing not following your dreams or courting your creativity? Get on with it. We are working with limited amounts of time. Use it and use it wisely, because you just don't know. I'm sending so much big love out to all of you today, and I can't wait to talk to you soon.